Good morning. We'll commence the meeting of the Governance Committee. The first item on our agenda is approval of the agenda. And I gather in this organization, we actually vote to approve agendas. So is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion?
Wait, it has to be a committee member who's... So Tom or Mort, I guess. Thank you, Tom.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the vote will occur on the motion. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. We've approved the agenda. Second item on our agenda is consideration of minutes of our meeting of November 15. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Are there any suggested amendments to the minutes of the meeting of November 15? Hearing none, the vote will occur on the motion. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We've approved the minutes. The next item on our agenda is consideration of nominations for board officers beginning after January of 2013. I've discussed this item with all the members of the committee, and we've determined that we will defer this item until January 10, when the committee will meet to consider nominations for board officers. A lot of discussions are underway among members of the board about what they are willing and unwilling to do to serve this agency. Some are more willing than others. Some would be very happy to give up some of their responsibilities, and so there are a lot of discussions underway, and those discussions will continue, and we will take that item up in January. The next item,
Mr. Barnes, could I just add a little bit? Would that be all right?
Of course.
I think it's worth it to remember that this is the first time that this board has dealt with a leadership change. When most of us came 2 years ago, Kathy was already selected. There had been a lot of work done around committee chairs, et cetera. And last year we made the decision, a good decision, I think, to keep our leadership intact and move it forward. So this is really the first time that we've collectively had to work our way through. And I just think that's an important context for the region to have.
Yeah, if I could comment on that.
Mr. Downey.
Working with underdeveloped countries, as I have.
Do you have your mic on?
Working with some underdeveloped countries, as I may have done in the past, one of the watchwords always is the most important transition is the one after the new process goes in place, which tells you whether, in fact, it will be a sustainable process. So it is important.
Well, that's right, and our bylaws have been changed. We've done away with automatic rotation of leadership at the organization. That we considered under Ms. Hines' leadership different proposals for other changes in our governance. So there's a lot been happening that makes it logical that we carefully assess. How we go forward over the next year or two. Any other comments on that issue of deferment of item 3A? If not, we'll go to item 3B, the consideration of a new board travel policy, and I will ask our distinguished general counsel to lead us through this discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. Good morning, and good morning, members of the committee. We have today for your consideration a draft travel policy. It's the first time the board will have before it the adoption of its own distinct travel policy. I think the board considers this a part of its ongoing update and consideration of governance matters. And previously, I believe the board largely followed the employee travel policy as far as what types of travel expenses and normal business expenses could be reimbursed, but there was never a separate policy for the board. So we have put together one for you. The board secretary, Mrs. Sequeira, obtained a number of policies, both from other transit organizations as well as other public entities. We took a look at those, and we took a look, of course, at the WMATA employee policy. And so what you have before you is a synthesis of those various policies. However, it does closely track the WMATA employee policy. So there are a couple of exceptions, however. So we'll go through it for you. There are only a couple of things that the board needs to pay, I think, close attention to, and we'll get to those. So the main thing about travel policies, and I think the reason that there's so much similarity among a lot of different organizations, is they're designed to ensure compliance with the IRS requirements for appropriate documentation of business-related expenses. There isn't appropriate documentation. The law requires that those expenses be taxed as income. So clearly, all policies are designed to ensure both prudent expenditures of public funds, expenditures of those funds consistent with IRS requirements, and clarity. So we hope that this policy does that. The main thing I think that the board needs to consider, and there's a little bit that potentially a little bit of confusion here that we can take credit for, we meaning the Office of General Counsel. There's been a bit of a change in the employee policy. Up until July 1st, there were three options available for reimbursement of travel expenses. The first was just the straight federal per diem, and the federal per diem gives you an amount for your, of course, actual amount for travel, and a per diem amount for hotels and expenses, food and other incidental. And the hotel amount varies according to the city. So there's a varying amount. That's the federal per diem. There's also a hybrid option that allows, of course, actual costs for travel, actual costs for hotel without restriction, and then a per diem for meals and incidental expenses. And then the third option, which is always acceptable to the IRS, is full documentation of expenses. There are a few exceptions that the IRS recognizes might be difficult to get receipts for. So as of July 1st, the authority moved for employees to what is designated as the federal per diem, but is actually probably closer to the hybrid in the sense that it still allows receipted amounts for hotels. So I think that's an acknowledgement of both administrative ease and convenience, plus some latitude taking into account sometimes the difficulty of booking lodges within the strict federal per diem amount. So it's a federal option. As described in the WMATA employee policy, does have some flexibility, so it's probably closer to what we're describing in here as the hybrid. So the real decision for the board is, in terms of this policy, is how you want to go, whether you want to just stick with the employee policy, which again is closer to what I would call a hybrid. You could do the straight federal, which gives you specific amounts for both hotels and incidentals, food and incidentals, or give yourself the option of doing any of the three. The real issue is you need to make the decision before you travel. So those are that's what I will call the main decision point for the board. There is an approval requirement for board members. Each board member would have to get approval from the chair. The chair would not approve his or her own expenses, but would go to a vice chair for that approval. So that's a check and balance in the system that is not currently followed. Of course, for the employees in WMATA, there's always an approving official, someone who has to take a look make sure that the expenditures are consistent with the travel policy and are prudent and appropriate. So for the board members, that will be the board chair. And that is a consistent requirement through all the policies that we took a look at. And so that is included. There are similar provisions in the policies that board members, travelers need to book by the most effective and cost-efficient means. And if there is the desire, of course, to stay extra days or take a different route to travel, because that's something that the board member desires, and of course the cost for that is borne by the board member, by the traveler, and that's consistent with the WMATA policy. You can stay extra days, you can take a companion, but of course you bear the cost for that. And that's quite standard for pretty much all travel policies that we've looked at. There is always a preference in cities to use transit as a means of travel, but if that's not available, then of course taxis can be approved. You can also use rental cars. There are very specific provisions in there about what should or should not be taken on as far as insurance. The authority already pays for a certain level of insurance, so travelers are not encouraged to buy extra or separate. So that is completely consistent with the board policy. There's a little nuance about private vehicles that I think the board should be aware of. Some policies that we looked at placed all of the liability for using a traveler's private vehicle on the traveler. WMATA, for example, does that. WMATA does not, although there is a preference for using public transportation, and of course for employees, WMATA vehicles, if it's appropriate to use the private vehicle, and many times it is, that certainly will be approved. The third-party liability that might be associated with that, if a board member is traveling on WMATA business, is borne by the authority. That's the policy for WMATA employees. The compact has an indemnity requirement. If there is a third-party claim that arises out of the use of your vehicles, that is something that, under the compact, the authority picks up. If it is not a third-party claim, but your vehicle is damaged in a one-car incident or somebody else hits you, then the authority picks up essentially the deductible, $500 deductible. The rest is borne by your private insurance. So that's something to keep in mind or just to be aware of when you use your private vehicle. Of course, there are non-reimbursable items, always is the case in this policy, as well as virtually every policy that we looked at. Things like liquor, tips, entertainment, first-class travel. And again, travel life insurance or any kind of vehicular insurance that is not in addition or separate from what the authority already provides. Hotel room service, for example, would not be reimbursed. So those types of exclusions are in the policy. They're in the WMATA employee policy, and they're pretty standard, I think, throughout most expense travel policies. We have a few ineligible, but they're what you would assume. You wouldn't be able to pay somebody else's expenses if you couldn't claim it for yourself, for a business associate, a metro contractor, things of that nature. But I don't think that it's anything at all that you wouldn't expect. So one other thing that is a little bit different from the employee policy, but I don't think it's any different from what has been standard practice here for years. Their travel advances are not available to board members, and that practice varies among the other policies. Sometimes they're available, sometimes they're not for board members. So, and of course, there's no use of a WMATA credit card for traveling, and that's also the case for WMATA employees. And with that, I'll open myself to questions. I'm sorry, I neglected to mention Mark Pohl, and I apologize to Mark and everyone else. Mark is an associate general counsel in our office. He's our resident tax expert, and he was primarily responsible for drafting, and any tax questions you might have, please direct to him.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank you and Mark and Poyta and all his colleagues who worked on this. I know a lot of time and thought went into preparing this draft for us. Mrs. Hines and I had a couple of lengthy meetings with you on this over the last month or two, and some important considerations that were raised were addressed, and we appreciate it. A lot of good work. Are there questions, comments that colleagues want to raise at this point? Ms. Bowser.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes, and I want to thank you for putting this forward. It's always best to have clear guidelines, and it's been my experience that people want to follow them if they know what they are. I do want to understand why the authority moved to one option instead of the three option for employees. Was there some impetus behind that?
It's my understanding that it was for administrative convenience, and it's just there are a lot of employees, and it's much more straightforward to have a standard approach for everything. The full receipt option is acceptable certainly to the federal government, but it is more laborious for everybody. So I think really historically most employees, certainly I always chose what I would refer to as the hybrid, and that's still available, although again the policy is a little bit misleading. It's tending more towards the federal per diem, but there's still the ability to simply have a separate receipted item for hotels without having to actually keep within the overall federal per diem.
Okay.
So I believe it's simply for administrative convenience. That's our understanding with speaking with the people who are responsible for it. But there are far fewer board members, so it seems like the options would be appropriate, or at least I thought the options would be appropriate to place before the board.
Okay. I don't know that I feel strongly about it one way or the other, except that I think more options are better than fewer options.
I agree.
So I think if there's been no problem with it, I think I would stick with the ability to have the per diem for meals and the receipt for hotels. But my other question would be for leadership, and that is how are we setting aside training and travel monies in port so how members know what's appropriate to go to or attend?
It's a great question. I don't think we have worked our way through that. I think that it's a great question, and I think, you know, my experience in the 2 years has been that a lot of us who are new are interested in attending, we're learning things, but I'm not sure, and I suspect if we ask Loretta, she'd tell us we've run over that line of our budget for the last couple of years. So I think there probably is more work that we need to do about who goes where and how often and all of that together.
Thank you.
Would you disagree, Mr. Barnes?
No, I think we ought to take a look at that item in the budget and make sure that it's appropriate, adequate for purposes of board education and attendance at appropriate conferences, but not anything that could be considered excessive. Madam Chair.
I just wanted to comment because I think in prior experiences there's been no policy directing as to who as priority attends and travels. I think the purpose has generally been to allow opportunity for folks to experience the educational or training aspect of utilizing it. But I think it does both then being governed by a budget as well as the policy as to why the value of the travel is there. And I think it's something that comes back to the next side of this that has to be I think, discuss the.
Mr. Downing?
Yeah, on the question of the budget, I assume we've had a budget, we haven't exceeded it. Certainly, my experience has been, there's not been any excessive or unreasonable travel. So we ought to look at it, but I'm not suggesting there's been a problem. And our expense reports are a public record, so if there were a problem, I'm sure we would have heard about it.
Right, I think.
I have a couple of questions. Just clarification on insurance. I understand the no purchase, I never do purchase it, but I was not aware that the authority did carry insurance that would.
It's regarding when you do rental vehicles.
Oh, on rental vehicles, not life insurance or.
No,
okay.
On rental vehicles.
On first-class travel, I assume this would not preclude use of your own frequent flyer miles for an upgrade?
It isn't addressed in the policy.
Yeah.
I don't know why it would be precluded.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an authority expense.
Right, it's not an authority.
Not that I usually get to. I think the last time I flew out was number 64 out of 64 on the upgrade list, but I'm always hopeful. More substantive issue on the per diem. I did a lot of federal travel for a lot of years, and I typically found that my actual expenses were not as high as the per diem. Typically, you go to a conference, it includes a lunch, it includes a breakfast, it includes a dinner, and I was embarrassed. I basically never took the per diem because it was not an expense that I actually had incurred. So I assume I'd still have that opportunity.
There is a provision that if the actual conference includes meals, then that should not be collecting the per diem for that amount. So, right. I mean, it is, I believe, addressed in the policy. So you can't make profit from it, or it's not intended when you put in your expenses that you don't collect the per diem for those meals.
Don't put in for it if you didn't incur it.
Right.
If you didn't incur anything, put in for the per diem.
Right, exactly.
Not lucrative in terms of actually paying the deal, but better than nothing.
Mrs. Hunt.
This is really a question. I'm looking at the actual policy on 3-2, which is out-of-town transportation. The last line says the traveler may upgrade accommodations at his or her own expense. For clarity purpose, do we want to just say including the use of frequent flyer miles, and then there's no question, and it's acknowledged in the policy?
We can certainly put that in there.
Any objection? Hearing none. The amendment is adopted. We do have the issue before us of option A and option B, as Ms. O'Keefe indicated, and I'll just state my own view for the committee's consideration, and that is that I don't think the board should have a different policy than we have for our employees. I don't think we should have a policy which is more liberal for ourselves than we have for our employees. If we think the policy for the employees is the wrong policy, then we ought to raise that with management and maybe get that policy changed. But it would be hard for me to justify supporting a policy which gives us more choices about how we get reimbursed with respect to travel than the employees get. I know that there are others who feel differently about that, and we'll have to vote on option A and B here and decide which one, but I think the board should restrict ourselves to the same restrictions that our employees are restricted to. It would be hard for me to understand why we wouldn't. But others may have a different view, and that's why we have two options before us, because others did have a different view.
Yeah, Tony wanted to talk.
Mr. Giancole.
Yeah, back to the training just for a second. As I recall, there was training offered for the board members to go to some APTA events in the spring, and that's the only training we've really been afforded. So again, I agree with Mort. It doesn't seem like it's a big problem, and it wasn't that expensive. So I certainly would just wanted to add that to the discussion. That's all.
Training should be encouraged. Mrs. Hines.
Well, let me speak to the A and B difference, and I do appreciate the clarification that staff provided. My experience has been the same as Mort's. I never hit the county per diem when I travel. I'm always below it. And so I have tended to keep my receipts and do that because I felt that was, you know, I just want to use as little of the public's money to do this appropriate travel as I can, so I don't go to fancy restaurants and I, you know, grab everything at the conference. So that was really the reason why I thought getting to something that had that flexibility, so if somebody was willing to keep their receipts and go with a lower amount, that was available. You know, I don't know if Loida, you know, wants to opine on how many, if she's had any difficulty sort of administering it, because she's the one for the last 5 years who's been managing all of this for us, but I'm interested in using as little of the agency's money to support this as I can. I want to travel inexpensively. I do like to stay at the conference hotel because it's easy, but I'm not, you know, so that was why I favored kind of keeping the flexibility. Do you have anything to add, Lynn?
Difference administratively, we can do either one. I just think that the option gives you, as a board member, choices.
Mr. Downey. The Airports Authority has had a serious travel problem. Shocked to hear that. And recently adopted a new travel policy, which in fact was blessed by Secretary Lloyd as an appropriate policy. Are we inside that? Do you know?
I know we looked at it.
Yes, we did take a look at it, and I believe that our policy is certainly consistent with that policy. There are always variations in policies depending on the particular circumstances. Again, I mentioned one difference. The MWA policy requires board members to rely on their own insurance if they use their own vehicle and there's an accident. Because the authority policy does not do that, although, again, you need to go through the process of getting approval to use your private vehicle, but I would imagine in many circumstances that's going to be the most cost-efficient approach.
Like travel, like the hotel, like meals,
they're very similar. I think you'll see when you actually have a policy, there are substantially the same types of provisions in virtually all travel policies. So it's a matter of, and you can get to the total expenditure through your budget process, I think is how, I mean, of course you could have a budget that provides for a total of 5 trips for each board member. It's been my experience, and just looking, board members don't really do that. So that part of the board's discretion, I think, is where you set prudent boundaries as far as expenditures.
Well, we'll have an approval process. The board chair would have to approve any travel, so that's helpful in that regard. Mr. Downs.
I appreciated the fact that under 1.1 on policy under C, where board members shall use prudent judgment regarding all expenses incurred before travel, it dawned on me that this in part reads like an employee handbook item. And I'm very much in favor of emphasizing the unique responsibilities that board members have above and beyond what we expect of employees. We are the face of the authority to the public. The public has expectations about us. I think the statement in part reiterates what Mary just said about obligations of public visibility. To have a value statement that is part of the policy, perhaps putting it, including the item C, putting it at the top of the policy list to emphasize that board members carry additional public accountability, and that, for instance, I think we could say Board members shall always respect the public's expectation of what is acceptable when traveling. The public does have expectations. They know when they've been violated in their own mind. And I think it's also important to say that board members are expected to minimize expenses through good judgment, not just that there are chargeable rates, but that there is an expectation that board members will do due diligence about minimizing any expenses where possible. And I think those are kind of value framing at the front end that would differentiate our responsibilities as board members from what we expect of regular employees. So I'd encourage us to make more of a front-end value statement around policy.
Do you have an amendment that you're proposing? You want to move C up to A and
C up to A and add the language that board members should always respect the public's expectation of what is acceptable when traveling, and that board members, as a result, are expected to minimize expenses through good judgment.
So that should go beyond compliance.
Yes. Compliance to intent. Start with intent, and then you can talk about technical compliance.
Mr. Barnes?
Not.
One of the committee members probably needs to take on Mr. Downs's suggestion to make sure that it's in keeping with the way the work so that it gets moved by a committee member. And I'm struggling not with the one about exercising, minimizing expenses. I actually think the kind of affirmative way you're stating it is stronger and better than what's here. And I would sort of say I think we need to get rid of A. A doesn't say anything except we're trying to conform it to the existing policy. So I think A needs to go away. I don't know if we want to start with minimizing expenses or if we want to start with saying we do this because we think it makes us better board members. I think that's the place to lead from is B, and then the next comes. But here's the, I'm struggling with your other idea, and I think it's more the words that you're using than the idea. So let me try this. The public's expectation is,
who giggled?
You know, I'm dealing with a situation right now in Arlington about what the public's knowledge and the public's expectation is, where it's all over the map, and it's very hard to pin down. So what we're trying to say is that we act with integrity that is respectful of the public's trust in us. And I think that's it's not what their expectation, it's not their definition. It is that we act with integrity because we are stewards of the public trust. And therefore, we seek to minimize the expenses that we incur in the work that we do on the public's behalf. And a statement like that, which is more about us and less about their perception and more about the stewardship responsibility, is one I could support. But this thing about perception of integrity, I have a lot of difficulty with knowing what standard I'm being held to then. So I don't know if other people.
I would suggest that the statement C, 1C, already says that. It doesn't say it in a lot of words, but it says that shall use prudent judgment regarding all expenses incurred during official travel. And I think setting the standard of the per diem for meals and other things speaks to making prudent financial decisions also. I don't know that you need to say anything more than that. I would support leaving it as it is.
I would, as always, Ms. Hines has a better craftsmanship about language than I do. I would be comfortable if it simply recognized that language that recognized our accountability to the public, that we are standard bearers for the authority and need to act accordingly. I think.
Maybe we could put in front of C as stewards of the public trust. The board members shall use prudent judgment regarding all expenses incurred. Does that work? I mean, it just gives it a little bit more context. Does that work for you, Tom?
Works for me.
If you'll move it, I'll second it.
I will move that we add, as stewards of the public trust, to the beginning of C.
And move C up.
You
wanted to get rid of
let's
A.
Let's remove A.
Is there objection to removing A?
Okay, let's remove A. I still would like to start with travel is a good thing for these reasons. That's the purpose. And then as stewards of the public trust becomes the second statement. So B becomes A, C becomes B, et cetera. Does that work for people? Are you okay with that, Mr. Barnes?
I would have done it the other way. I would have put the stewards of the public trust first, but I don't feel that. Either way works.
I don't care if you really want it the other way. Go ahead.
Flip a coin.
We do have two other committee members, so perhaps they haven't been in.
We'll go with Ms. Hines' proposal. So it's going to be in the document, and either way. Is there objection? Hearing none, the amendment is approved. We do have to vote, unless there are other amendments that or questions that members of the committee or the board have. We do have to vote on the issue of adopting the option A or option B. And as I understand it, option B is the procedure that our employees use. Option A is the procedure our employees used to use, but the policy was changed in the middle of this year, as I understand it.
Yes, with a slight modification. I was trying to explain that although the employee policy is called a federal per diem, there is the latitude to simply use expenses for the hotel accommodation. So it's probably closer to the hybrid than the federal per diem. But there's a bit more latitude in option B than the pure federal per diem.
And that's not incorporated in option B, that latitude?
It is not, because I didn't understand it, but it would be if you chose option B. So what we would do is simply replicate what's in the employee policy.
That was my intent in our previous discussions,
exactly.
that we have an option that the board adopt the same procedures that the employees utilize.
So if the board adopts option B, it would still have the flexibility of getting actual receipts for the hotel.
And that would satisfy the concerns that I've heard expressed by our very honest members who can submit less than they're entitled to under the per diem process.
What is excluded is the full receipt option.
Right.
So,
but our employees don't have that.
No, they do not.
Are there further questions about this before we put this to a vote?
I just want to be clear. You prefer the employee policy for the board. But you're saying that the employee policy allows for the submission of a receipt for the hotel.
Correct.
In addition to the federal per diem for all other expenses.
For meals and incidentals, yes.
Okay. Well, with that would be my chief concern, the hotel bill.
Sure. Mr. Dow.
In the federal policy as well allows for, if the necessity is to be at a hotel, it's more expensive than the federal per diem rate, which would usually get you a one-star location at the far edge of town. The federal policy permits that as well.
As a practical matter, board members are going to conferences, and there's a conference hotel, and you want to stay in that hotel because that's where the meetings are, and that's where you want to stay, and as a practical matter, that's where you ought to stay. Makes it easier for you to go to all the meetings and take advantage of everything the conference offers. And we want to have a process that permits you to be reimbursed for the cost of staying in a conference hotel, which is usually a rate lower than the hotel's normal rate, because the conference has negotiated a lower rate.
But it's usually higher than the federal per diem.
Yeah, that's right. But this, our employee policy, and if we vote for option B, we're being assured that you'll have that prerogative. Further questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of option B.
Is there a second? I'll second the motion. Is there further discussion? The vote will occur on Mr. Downey's motion. All in favor vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. Appears to be 2-1 at the moment. We have 3 ayes, 1 nay. The motion is adopted. Are there further amendments proposed, or any further questions with respect to the travel policy issue? If not, we need a vote, I assume, on the adoption of the official board travel policy. Do I have a motion?
I'd move that we recommend the board adopt the travel policy at our January meeting.
As amended?
As amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a discussion? Hearing none, the vote occurs on the motion. All in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The the committee will recommend to the board in January its approval of the travel policy as amended today. Are there any other items that members wish to bring before the committee today? If not, let me just, in closing, remind everybody that next month we'll be taking up possible amendments to our board procedures, our bylaws, our ethics standards, etc. We have all been asked to provide to the board secretary before the end of this month, so you've got 11 days to get to Loida, any suggestions for the committee to consider in January, for this committee to consider in January, for changes to our procedures. I've got a couple. I know others have got a couple that you're interested in. I have not yet sent mine to Loida, but I will do so, and I hope everyone else will as well. Mr. Downey.
Yes, question on process. The understanding is we'll discuss in January based on what Carol has put together, but then take action in February. Is that the
That's case? Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. The committee will consider them in January, and the board will consider them in February.
And it's important to just note that this committee will meet twice in January.
Yes.
In order to process that work. So we'll have a committee meeting both days.
We'll have 2 committee meetings in January, which is unusual, but necessary. If there is no further business to come before the committee, we will stand adjourned.